Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. We are here with yet again another report. But before that, I don't know about Dwight, but I'm going to give a lot of financial advice on how to manage millions. I don't even have $1,000 now. That's why I love my job.
Well, the nice thing is, when it comes to these millions that we're going to talk about, in some cases it might be a couple of billion.
I know, right? Considering the ministry we're going to talk about.
Yeah, it makes us sound like super articulated for no reason. Articulation is probably just, how we're communicating what we're going to talk about.
But before we get there, how is the afternoon? Wherever you are tuned in from, thank you for choosing Eagle FM at this time of the day, whether you are at the comfort of your living room or someone else's living room, or you are in your car or someone else's car, not judging, just saying thank you very much for tuning in. And we're here as always until the hour of six. Of course, in the cockpit is Helmut and Dwight as always.
What? This is an airplane? I don't want to be in any of those things anytime soon, Helmut.
Relax, it's not a Boeing.
I don't want to be in any of those things. Well, considering how things have been going for the past 2 weeks, even after our discussion yesterday.
Which is why I'm saying relax, it's not a Boeing.
I mean, feel for the Qataris. The Qataris even went like, what did we do, dude? What did we do?
I know, right? That's...
Qataris were like, we have the right to defend ourselves. And Donald Trump is saying that. So people signed a ceasefire. And the Qataris were like, we didn't know that part.
like just, if I was in the Qatari government, I would have gone with, just explain to me which part of the ceasefire were we supposed to find. We were not part of the conflict in the first place.
Exactly. We weren't. Yeah, but you guys have an American base. It's still, we are not.
Well, it's still sovereign territory.
Yeah.
But look, I can understand the confusion in the eyes of the Qatari. I mean, if I was Iran, I would have gone, but you gave him a plane. But,
It was them.
It was them.
It was them that gave the plane.
Okay, let's just
the
say.
The gold-plated plane.
This is a low-key plane revenge situation we are looking at. And then geopolitics.
Imagine the Qataris go back. Give that plane back. I want a refund. Give me the plane back.
Let's modify it in the name of, let's customize it to the likings of the Iranian supreme leader.
Yeah.
Because you clearly pretty useless.
Yeah. You just didn't do your part.
Hand it over.
Now the worst thing is the Helmut. After the whatever happened there yesterday, discussion with Qatar's airspace and Iran, is Donald Trump goes and says thank you to Iran for a weak attempted attack on the Al Udeid airbase in Qatar. Huh? Have you ever thanked someone for throwing a weak punch at you, Helmut, by saying thank you for your very soft but very weak feminine punch?
The way I'm seeing this is, my friend goes to provoke someone, and then that someone comes and not punch my friend or me. Actually, they punch my friend and then punch you in the process. And then I tell that guy, well, thank you for throwing such a weak punch in Dwight's face.
No. This is after what? This is after you gave him a Superman punch, you Superman punched him on Sunday morning, and then he comes back. He throws a normal punch at your friend, but his punch at you on Monday is like very soft, it's like literally just tapping with a handkerchief, a silk handkerchief.
Yeah.
That's how, and you go like, thank you for your very soft punch.
But your friend is going, hey, what the heck did I do?
And then just after that, you go and say, well, there's a ceasefire. Everybody must stop. And then your friend goes like, but he's still throwing punches, bruh.
Yeah, so I'm going to keep going. Oh, man.
Now, that's just to sum up yesterday's discussion, guys, in terms of where it finds itself today. As of this, this Tuesday, because Trump got on a plane for a NATO summit after leaving early from a G7 summit last week.
He's going to leave early again.
He's probably going to leave early. I also suspect so. something's going to happen again where he's going to leave early again, because he left early from the G7 summit, which was literally just across the border in Canada.
I came across one video where one guy that I follow that does economic analysis. I think he's to some degree worked for the American intelligence, but not in the clandestine hush-hush, but more like in the economic analysis department.
Mm.
But he now resides in China, which raises a lot of questions for me. But he does some amazing analysis of basically just how much have been spent by both the U.S. and Israeli on the attacks that have been taking place in Iran, and the money. Your defense equipments are expensive.
Yeah, I follow Advanced. What's the guy's name? Advanced. What's that one?
These guys are burning millions a day.
Yeah, Helmut, I know. There's this one American company I follow on Facebook that sells American hardware. They make tanks and stuff like that. They make armored cars and stuff like that for the American military. You should see the stuff that they are making. But then you should look at the warehouses where the product comes out of. It looks like a rundown warehouse situation here in someone's backyard with a bunch of backyard mechanics. And these guys are selling millions. A thing that costs millions.
Yeah. Now, the problem is, when it comes to, take for example, if the war was to drag on for a month or two, that will also, it's beginning to sort of like, extend to the supply chain. Because much of the rare earth minerals or rare earth metals are either directly or, partially or, completely dominated by China. So it's kind of difficult now for an American defense contractor to ask for more like, to buy more rare earth metals to bomb China's buddy. I love geopolitics, but. Let's come back home and let's talk about what we are here to talk about, this home run time. And that's the report, is it a performance or a qualified report? Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Report.
No, but you started a little bit early, Hamad. You have to say the accounts of the Ministry of Health report.
Accounts?
Because they're literally looking at monies that were budgeted for and actual monies that were spent.
Just one financial year? Don't go.
It's not like the whole landscape of things.
Mm-hmm.
So this is only for 2023-2024's financial year.
Yeah.
So that means we're sitting a whole year
later
getting this report. Yeah. So if you're trying to go crazy now and going like, just calm down. Put the brakes on your horse or whatever horse you're on currently. You won't get anywhere fast, believe you me, because it's a whole year later.
Mm-hmm.
This was still when he's now the executive director at Ministry of Mines, Energy, Industrialization, or Industry. Keep forgetting that name.
Oh dear.
That's now Mr. Benna Ngombe. That's when he was still executive director at Ministry of Health.
Yeah.
It's now
and the minister was,
The minister was still,
the minister was still, 5 infections and 3 recoveries.
What? 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 I don't know that name.
I know you don't know it. So, executive director Ben Angobe, please go on.
That caught me so offside. Listen, let's not go there. Let's identify the people who they are. So yeah. It was still under
Kalumbi Shangula.
Yeah, Minister Kalumbi Shangula's tenure. And yeah, this particular takes a look at a window where you could look at all the directorates. You see all the directorates as well. Now the nice thing is, Helmut, the annexures also show very nice things in terms of where they've got capital expenditure programs.
Yeah.
Just one program. Remember back to our midterm expenditure framework. Was it 1,000-page document? That we did. If you remember back to that document, now remember the one that this financial year comes out of is from the 500-page one that we did last year.
Yeah.
Not the 1,000-page
one. 1,001.
That starts from this year. So just so that people also know, It also fits into that particular discussion because they have they received monies from Ministry of Finance also for renovations of facilities, construction of things, the prepping up of certain facilities, or sort of like rejuvenating them in terms of, you know, a little, doing some work on them so that they can actually, you know, serve a different purpose or have augmented purposes to the communities. These are public health facilities, obviously. And this was a lot of that ultimately factors into internally funded expenditure for those particular outcomes. Just one that was externally funded. And we actually have to be proud once again regarding that. Remember, just like the same thing with the new medium term expenditure framework. That's the correct word, not midterm. Medium term.
Actually, it's not midterm. Is it midterm? I think it's midterm.
Because the
expenditure framework, yeah.
The budgetary review at the end of this year in October is the midterm budget review. Yeah. That one is midterm because that's in the middle of a financial year.
Yeah.
So anyway, from that particular analysis, the one, firstly, you get to know, okay, what they've got, what they actually spent on, what was allowed and so forth. Then there's a little bit of a disclaimer that also features in there. There was monies from the previous budget that were continuously moved on into another.
More like repurposed.
No, not repurposed. There's a word that says that there's a word known as virement in there. If you spell it, it's V-I-R-E-M-E-N-T. Virement is almost like deferring. You move something from one period into the next.
Mm.
But to defer
one financial year into the next or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now there's a term in there, that virement term. And this obviously would appeal to any particular accounting student out there. They love these, but they're technicalities. It's just English, man. If they can just, in most cases, just, you know, play the language game like the rest of us play it.
That's one thing I don't like about doctors. His cardiac arrest. Homeboy is dying of heart attack. Stop wasting time.
But it's must they codified lingo.
I know, right?
Which is also what this reporter had, because I had to go like, what are these guys talking about? For example, it's interesting to see that most agencies or ministries and offices of the government, they actually also make use of the suspense account mechanism. Now, I got to learn the suspense account mechanism, Helmut, in the private sector. So a suspense account is when your finance department tells you, these are monies that we received. We can't allocate it anywhere because we don't know why we received this money. We know who it comes from because you obviously ask your bank, where did this money come from?
Mm-hmm.
And your bank will tell you, this is a payment from XYZ or from this destination or from this particular account or... They will never tell you it's an unclassified amount or it's an unknown account. Your bank will never tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
They will tell you at least where it comes from, at least where it originates from, who's the other bank that sent the money. Because remember, this is two banks talking to each other.
Yeah.
Now, it's very interesting also to see the Ministry of Health employ or apply a suspense account mechanism. Now, suspense accounts, usually, like I just explained to you, is for monies coming in and you don't know what to do with the money because the money is not identified. There's not a reference and you try now to trace what this is for. Reason why you need to make use of a suspense account. In many cases, Helmut, some private institutions, some companies, they can't touch that money.
Okay. But
let's say that money was incorrectly paid to you. You can't touch that money. Or let's say it's from a service provider and they just paid an amount, but they don't reference a receipt number. They don't reference an invoice.
Like what service that was rendered for them to pay that amount of money.
Yeah. And you try to trace it from them. And then they say, you know what? We paid based upon something and we don't know. So in many cases, you can't just use that money. Now that money just sits there. Now, from my own particular experience, back then. This is more than 7 years back. The finance department, colleagues that I had at that time, they were under so much pressure and stress because they were told every time when it comes to the auditors showing up, you know, to do the audit of the company, the auditors would start with them. The auditors would tell them, why do you have this so much money in your suspense accounts? Now, this is just unallocated money. Now, the worst thing that I ever encountered from finance department colleagues was there was a colleague that I once worked with. Now, this is a scenario where a client, Helmut, overpaid on a particular quote I sent them. And then I had to negotiate with them a sort of like a mechanism by saying, listen, this money that you paid, work it off. Use it up. Because the money is just sitting there. Use it up. And it was an upfront payment by this client. And the client said, okay, not a problem. And then I communicated via email and another particular discussion to the finance guys. And I had to go and tell them, I'm giving you a physical printout and this proof of payment. Do note that this customer will work this money off. They will use it up. Just so that you guys know.
They'll use our services that is equivalent to this amount of money? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
So they will use it up. Because it's just basic, it's basic transparency.
Yeah.
And it also shows that there's an aspect of integrity as well as also people are, they play to the rules. They stick to the rules. Sure. Every month, Helmut, a different finance colleague would come to me and ask me, Dwight, what's going on with this money? Where is it going? What's happening? Yes, I'm trying to sound like Donald Trump. What's happening with this money? Where is it going? Now, every month, the client would use a placement every Friday of the money. And every time I had to explain to the people, here is a new invoice, attach it to that money. That money is busy being used or utilized under this new particular engagement of this client. For some reason.
And that's a lot of work.
I actually liked it, Helmut. Many people used to say, yeah, just try and simplify things. Yeah, but that's when you bring in the lazy bums that bring you AI and then you get the dumb guys that go and use AI.
ChatGPT and problem solved.
You should see people saying, let me ask Grok on X or let me ask ChatGPT. And then the thing sits there lying to you. Do you know that every time I see a streamer use an AI net, mm-hmm. I change over from watching because it just shows me that they're completely dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Now, streamers are technically what you and I do because technically what you and I are doing here, we're doing like the podcast format of radio broadcasting.
Yeah.
Now, the streamers are similar to us. However, the streamers can sit there for 4 or 5 hours because it's their stream. That's all they do.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see someone go and say, Grok, what do they say? I'm like, oh my goodness.
Oh, dear Lord.
You're asking an AI, so you don't want to read. And then that AI can sit there lying to them. Because there was a time that the Grok from X, Elon Musk's X, was saying, oh, if you ask them, what's the weather like today, Grok? Then Grok gives you your response. And then at the bottom, it goes like, did you know that in South Africa, the white South Africans are facing a genocide? Did you know that?
Lord. No, I don't remember last time I used X.
No, because in this past start of this year, when Elon was still busy and Elon was just there for 3 months, Grok was saying those kinds of things. That was Elon feeding those things into Grok, into the database that Grok learns from.
This is one thing, this is why I'm really not a huge fan of politics in any serious sense. And that's because... when Elon Musk took over X from the previous owners, and he, one of the things that became, that was made public is that, the FBI, the previous owners were working in cahoot with the Biden administration.
Mm.
And they were using it to sort of like, crack down on everyone that did not have their point of view on, pretty much everything. So, And he was, he was praised as this guy that's coming in to restore human rights, freedom of speech, censorship, as you know, to change. And then he turned around and did the exact same thing that the previous owners did. So it's very easy to say, what are you doing? Don't do that when you are not in that position. But as soon as you give someone power, they do something similar, if not worse, than the previous guy.
Mm. Or they take it to a whole new level.
Oh, yeah, they do.
They take it to a whole new level.
If you vote for me, I'll not be corrupt. Then bro steals the whole country. So,
yeah. Or they go and employ a misinformation campaign. Believing that Donald Trump would literally speak in favor of your party. I mean, I can't believe that MK party. That MK party is the best. But yeah, getting back on point, Amo. So... They use a suspense account mechanism as well in the public sphere, in the public account sphere,
mm-hmm.
which is reassuring, I would say, to see, because at least Namibians would know there's not just wasteful, you know, budgetary, activities taking place. If something cannot be done, if something cannot be completed, or if something, or you don't know where this money actually comes from, you put it in that suspense account mechanism. Mm-hmm. But we actually have to get back to where you started from, Helmut, by mentioning what this audit report from the Auditor General's office actually deems the financial affairs of the Ministry of Health
was for this financial year in question.
Well, you can't say in question because...
Yeah, we're not questioning
it. Because we already said, you know, it's too far back to do anything about it, to even cry about it.
Today I found just a few things that I missed last week from this report. And that's, first of all, I like the transparency though.
Mm.
Now if we look at the Standing Committee on Constitutional and Legal Affairs on the infrastructure that's used in the dispensation of justice in Namibia, actually more disappointing because they were trying to find out what happened to the money that was given to these ministry in different entities back in 2015. So seeing that we are now sitting here today talking about something that was something that made 2023-2024 budget for ministry, I think we're getting there. We are not there yet, but slowly, please let's work hard and actually we'll get there. Yeah, now, that's, one thing that I actually, find like, and also not just this report, but, all the reports went through, one from the Minister of Mines and Energy. And, there's also one on the Ministry of Education. Yeah, now, these are the ones that, these are the ones that I've seen. Now, when you look at it, you begin to realize that, okay, we are actually working our way towards transparency.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're actually working our way towards, transparency. And this is where you now begin to see the scary part of working for public office. Because you can't afford to make a mistake at this point because it's going to raise a lot of questions and... because it's very easy to jump to conclusion than ask questions and actually read the report. It's very easy to just dial a number and go straight to, you know what, this is pure corruption. Which is why, last week when I talked about it, more like glossed through it. One thing that I kept making clear was that, what they're talking about here is that, what's frequently referenced in the report is that, the Ministry of Health, took money that was supposed to be, procured a lot of either goods or services, basically classified as emergency procurement. But according to the Auditor General's analysis, everything that they procured, first of all, procured under emergency terms, did not meet the criteria or the criteria of what you know of what is deemed to be what is deemed to be emergency or what should fall under emergency procurement in the Procurement Act.
Mm.
Now, when you look at that, you can't help but ask yourself one question. Now, this is where you now it's very fascinating to see what the Ministry of Health's response on this one is, Ministry of Health's response on this one is going to be. Because, remember that on the Oshakati courtroom door discussion, one thing that was pointed out was that, well, we could have procured it, but we didn't have any choice.
No.
And obviously this was a courtroom door. Obviously it did not fall under the definition of what, you can imagine the Ministry of Works went like, well, we could procure it as an emergency procurement, but according to Section 33 of the Procurement Act, it doesn't fall, we would be lying. And now that obviously, that means, for anything that doesn't fall under the emergency procurement, we have to follow the normal procurement, procedures. Again, there's actually a reason why the Auditor General's office pointed out why the procuring something under emergency procurement when it doesn't meet the criteria is because when it turns out, which I can't say that I was shocked to find out, that when you are procuring something quickly, more like through an emergency, it costs more.
And the nice thing of what the Auditor General highlighted is that they prove or motivate as to why they note or observe this particular sort of like, if we can call it a discrepancy, because that's under, point 4.3 or point 4, which is report on other legal and regulatory requirements. So firstly, like you highlighted, classifying something as emergency procurement, but it technically what you're procuring is not emergency.
Mm-hmm.
They started off with something known as unauthorized expenditure for that particular period. For example, they noted that the one main division was exceeded with a total of 66 million Namibian dollars, but this amount is unauthorized in terms of Section 6 of the State Finance Act. Adding on to that, they also noted that although Treasury approvals were obtained to utilize certain expected savings for the defrayal of excess expenditure through environments during the year, 15 operational subdivisions and 5 development subdivisions were exceeded by an amount totaling 106 million Namibian dollars, which is unauthorized in terms of Section 6.A. Section 6, subsection A, subsection 3 of the Act. Now, that obviously means that monies were just, because the word vironments is there, monies were moved about, which is literally the thing that we highlighted in the discussion regarding the Oshakati High Court door discussion, which was in its totality was about the judiciary and the Ministry of Justice being interviewed by the Standing Committee of Legal Affairs and Constitution, because they were trying to look back at budgets that these two entities got up way back until 2015, which is problematic. Just understand that, guys. Which is very problematic to look at. Which actually factors into the next thing that I'll highlight in our discussion a little bit later. Then there was the aspect of procurement methods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Auditor General noted, like you highlighted a little bit earlier, classifying something as emergency procurement, but when you look at what is procured, it is not emergency.
It doesn't fall under.
It doesn't even fall under.
It doesn't meet the criteria of emergency procurement.
So what they looked at is that under the public, they obviously cite the Public Procurement Act of 2015, Section 33, Subsection 1, Subsection 3, Subsection A, B of that subsection 3, where it states, for the purposes of the section, the word emergency includes a situation the country is either seriously threatened by or actually confronted with a natural disaster, catastrophe, or a war, or B, life or the quality of life or environment may be seriously compromised. Now, although the ministry had outlined goods and services, this is now what they note in the
report.
In the report under that same explainer. Although the ministry had, this is now the Auditor General's office. Although the ministry had outlined goods and services as part of its planned activities in the procurement plan, so they already indicated that it's part of their planned activities.
Mm-hmm.
The auditor discovered that the ministry resorted to using the emergency procurement method for acquiring various goods and services amounting to 19.2 million Namibian dollars. This procurement approach was used despite the goods and the services not meeting the criteria or requirements for an emergency procurement method. So these activities already were classified under the procurement plan. Remember that procurement plan discussion you and I also had a little bit earlier in this year and in last year?
Yeah.
The activities are there. They are listed there. This is what we're going to procure. But then the same activity is literally also placed under the emergency procurement mechanism, sort of like to try and streamline things. Now, I understand the streamlining of things. The question, or the question mark that pops up, which the Auditor General will not answer. Dear listeners, if you're sitting wondering whether or not that answer is there, they literally say, they observe, they say that this is what we see versus what you're supposed to do, and we cite it.
Yeah.
Would they just cite it? So if you're looking for further interpretations from the same entity past that, sorry, the interpretation already stopped in the first, was it the first, the findings section where they literally say why they classified the report as qualified, being that they've seen certain things, but it's only one thing that makes it qualified, being that they can't speak past, or they can't explain past a certain point, because everything so far had been represented in terms of financing and money spent. But just because of this one activity, which I think it's about 66 million, that was not spent, dear listeners, not, it was spent questionably, not spent. The money was meant for specific, accounts that were outstanding. The money wasn't spent. And because of that, the qualified opinion was applied in this report, just so that you guys know. So technically, when you work from that explainer, you know that everything else leading into the rest of the report cannot sound shady, because it was literally already qualified there, and they already sound, highlighted something else. And if you're trying to think of this particular approach or the accounts of government in a public, like you would find in a private sector scenario, where you're told you must, if you don't know where the money comes from, post it somewhere in a suspense account. No, you can't think that way. These guys have a standard that they also adhere to. And this particular standard forms part of, let me get that international standard, because they call it ISAI. It's ISSAI is the standard's name. So even then, The standard's name is ISAI, the International Standards of Supreme Audit Institutions. So you can obviously quite clearly see that it already subscribes or speaks towards, this is for public auditing of public institutions. And this is authorized and endorsed by the International Organization of Supreme Audit Institutions, INTOSAI. So ISAI is what they use. INTOSAI is the organization that presents this standard, this method of auditing in the public sector, specifically from the Auditor General's office. So, getting back from that explainer, because that explainer was pretty long. Now, just to also explain what qualified opinion is, and this is now verbatim, reading what it is. They note that an auditor's report is qualified when there is either a limitation of scope in the auditor's work, or when there is a disagreement with the management regarding application, acceptability, or adequacy of accounting policies. The only thing that makes this report, so that means they can, it does happen, Helmut, where you sometimes have management or
problems,
literally arguing with the auditors, the auditor that you're paying money for. Yes, I've seen it, Helmut. I've seen it. You think it's a joke? I've seen that those things happen. They literally come to almost throwing blows or trading blows with each other,
mm-hmm.
because the aspect of, you know, what kind of interpretation the affairs of the organization should have is one that could literally be, will these accounts or will this interpretation lead to your company having the opportunity to borrow money or not?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And that's the other thing that people also don't understand. If your accountant or if your auditor says, nah, Dwight, your affairs are terrible. They are literally a nightmare. You can write a Dean Koontz horror story from this thing or a Stephen King thriller from this thing. Then you know. You can't take that to a bank. The bank will tell you, bruh, what is this?
The bank will be like, this is not bad. This is a disaster wrapped in a catastrophe with a little hint of bad.
This is global warming coming to my front door.
What am I supposed to do with that? So, it's something that has to do with, it's something that basically threatens your financial future.
Yeah. Mm. So, the reason why...
I mean, the money world is a complicated one.
Well, it's interesting. It's like engineering and science.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the thing, Hamid. It is based upon a lot of standards and a lot of rules.
Yeah.
You have to meet the rules. If you register a company, if you register or if you participate in the accounting of a public office.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge. As we invest in time on our network enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage. For the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always prepared.
Welcome back. We had to, pay the bills. And now we're back at, where are we? The money world.
Yeah, the money world. So there are set rules. You sign up to those rules. That's also why you sometimes get told, do you have an auditor? Who's the auditor? What work have they done? Stuff like that. Yeah. Not a bookkeeper. Not your sister. Not your niece. Who sounds clever with books and she's got literally spectacles as thick as, you know, armor plates. No. They wish to see, you know, who's the credible entity that technically does your entity's books. So fast forward from that up to, you know, what we're actually talking about. The reason as to why the Ministry of Health for that time period got a qualified audit opinion from the Auditor General's office
mm-hmm.
was literally that they note here, outstanding commitments, and I explained it a little bit earlier as well, but we'll obviously just cite their words directly. They note the Auditor General's office that the accounting officer, which is the executive director of the ministry, reported outstanding commitments totaling 61.9 million Namibian dollars, indicating that these payments were not settled by the end of the financial year despite being committed. So this means,
some things kind of have to be together, right? Imagine, pop, but no flakes. Never. Or a goal without a celebration. And friends, but no Tassenberg.
Now that's just not right.
Tassenberg. Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
It's raining ads here. But don't get me wrong, that's good.
Don't worry, guys. Don't worry, guys.
Yeah, we still have. My myth is beyond rusty, rustier than the Titanic, more than half an hour. Let's stick with more than half an hour because I'm that lazy to do the myth.
Yeah.
So the audit report concludes. So that before I jump in with just how fascinating this whole thing is for me.
So, what is highlighted the aspect that motivates the qualified audit opinion as cited by the Auditor General is that they note here the accounting officer reported outstanding commitments totaling $61.9 million, indicating that these payments were not settled by the end of that financial year despite being committed. What that actually means is, let's say you had invoices.
Uh-huh.
You had put the money aside for those invoices, everything, but you just did not release the money to settle the invoices.
Ouch.
No, it's not an ouch. People go to the bank with loans, with showing proof that their clients owe them money.
Uh-huh.
They go to the bank. That's how credit facilities for businesses and for people actually keeps the money going in your economy. The downside here is, this is obviously an internal observation by the Auditor General.
Yeah.
Because it shows that there potentially was a time frame they were supposed to spend this money. Remember that particular question that many people sometimes have when we heard how ministries return money back to
Treasury.
To Treasury.
Yeah.
Where people were asking, why are you returning money?
Yeah.
What project?
It's not like you don't have projects to fund.
Yeah. What project did you not actually complete or did you not start?
Yeah.
And some of these projects have obviously they've got multi-financial year commitments or phases. An interesting thing was just saying, okay, if you were a service provider, that meant you had an invoice laying there. That invoice probably needed to be paid. However, that sentence by the Auditor General continues by saying, while the ministry actually realized under expenditure of $41.2 million. So under expenditure also translates to what you planned in your procurement planning, you were technically underspending the money. That was the budget. And it's not money that you sit with. You do something and then you send the invoice to, and that's obviously how I know, you send the invoice to Ministry of Finance and Ministry of Finance tells you, but so far it seems like you guys are busy underspending, vis-a-vis what you submitted you will spend. Remember back to what former Minister Shimi explained to the ladies?
That from we that only NGO. Give money to the Ministry of Home Affairs.
No, it was Gender.
Ministry of Gender.
And then was Ministry of Home Affairs. Yeah.
What project they prioritize with that budget is beyond our reach.
Yeah,
we don't dictate
it's,
that.
It's not Ministry of Finance dictating to Ministry of Home Affairs what they should focus on.
Yeah.
The same to also Ministry of Finance can't dictate to Ministry of Health what they should focus on.
Yeah.
Ministry of Finance just gets that procurement plan. They go like, okay, so this is your budget.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, yes, this is our budget. And based upon that, they dispense the money. Now.
And then they get a financial report in the, at the end of the day.
Yeah. Now in the middle of the financial year is where we get that October thing, the midterm
budget review.
Now at that level, the Minister of Finance can say, hey, listen, this ministry needs more money. Did you spend that part of that budget yet? No, we did not. Okay, we're taking money.
Over, yeah.
You'll have to defer that project into the next financial year. And then that money gets reallocated, repurposed, which was what happened with the Oshkati. I should leave the door alone.
It's kind of difficult to leave
alone. It's what happened to the Ministry of Justice, as the executive director last year explained to that standing committee. Because every time a midterm budget review pops up, they get asked by the Ministry of Finance, did you guys spend any monies that you guys did not spend or did not commit? And then they, I feel sorry for them. Every time they say, yeah, we did not yet on these and these and these particular projects that we want to initiate. And then the Minister of Finance goes like, okay, awesome stuff. You know what? I'll take that for now.
Next year.
Yeah. Next year we can talk about these projects again. So dear listeners, you also get to understand why certain things don't pop off, don't spring, don't start off. It's probably because the internal movement of finances in the state to commit or to ensure that commitments of certain things have been met.
Man, when you look at the process that the money goes, or more like the procedures that must be followed.
Yeah.
Also the ministry of, the Ministry of Finance just receives procurement plans and then make the funding available.
Mm.
But the Central Procurement Board pops up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then, they do the vetting and everything so that the ministry don't have to worry about it. Now, it's a good thing you brought up the midterm budget review. Because, at this point, it's very same, it's very safe to ask, public entity, why is the midterm budget review catching you off guard?
Mm.
Is it a procurement problem? Is it a delay on your part? Or is it a delay on the Minister of Finance part? Or is it a delay on the, Central Procurement Board side? So, first of all, when you just see how many entities are involved, that's when you see that each and every entity has its own procedures in mind on how to process the document that more like play their part into the overall project on how everything is going to go. The Ministry of Finance, every ministry makes, submits their procurement plans.
Yeah.
Although they were criticized earlier this year for being terrible at least most of them.
Well, I think all of them failed at planning.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so why are we even talking about planning? More like misplanning. But relax, we're not going to, it's not 9 o'clock in the morning. We're going to do that tomorrow. When you look at it, I think it's, let me just rephrase this, this in a form of a question. Okay. Doesn't it complicate things? For example, in case of ministry, what happened in the Ministry of Health? And, I don't think we can definitively say at this point that these things is only happening in the Ministry of Health, where money is given for something and then it's used for something different. Doesn't that conflict with the procurement plans that the Ministry of Finance has, but also with the invoices that are, that are coming? It's like, okay, now you said, you said you're going to buy this. And now I have invoices of something that I don't have on your procurement plan. So you have a mismatch of things that raises a lot of questions like, why would you do that?
Mm.
Now, on that one, just on that part now, going back again to the old story of the Oshakati courtroom door and the reasoning that the guys from the Minister of Works gave over why it took them forever to fix the door, we have to follow the process, you have to follow the procurement procedure. That then raises up the question of, procurement procedures have become too elaborate to the point where it's acting against us. Where you see that, it's basically, butting head with the midterm budget review. You have to follow, every piece of, you have to follow all the steps in the procurement plans to procure whatever it is that you want to procure because, well, that's the law. You have to follow it. Otherwise, then you will be accused of a lot of things, among one of them being corruption if the money is not found.
Mm.
Now, you have to follow that procedure unless what you're procuring meets the requirement of Section 33 of, Procurement Act of 2015, as emergency procurement. Now, I feel like, you know, it's just a matter of time before we start having a different conversation around Section 33 of the procurement plan. Is it time to expand the definition of what falls under procurement, or is it time to revisit the midterm budget review over what, what do we do with the money that is not spent? Yeah. Like, can we give you maybe another month or two to follow the needed procurement procedure? Mind you, this is not the ministry's fault. Yeah, it's not their fault they didn't spend the money. First of all, they have to follow the money. They have to follow the procedures. They have to follow the procurement procedures. And obviously, things can be late because, things can be late. Because of reasons that's beyond their reach. Take, for example, if the procurement board, is taking very long. Take, for example, one of the, medicine procurement, for example. And, we saw also with the Ministry of Education, procurement for, feeding programs. I don't know if I should call it feeding program. Mm-hmm. Food for school host, for schools with hostels. You have a bunch of people that you have a lot of people that applied for this tender, and then some of them, lost, and then they decided they didn't play anything. They just decided, there's lack of transparency here, therefore I'm going to take the Central Procurement Board to court. Yeah. Now, when you see each other suing each other over why, obviously, when there's this litigation's going on, there's no way that, that project is going to go on.
No, there's nothing. Which is actually a good thing that you highlighted, Ahmed, because, when it got to the section known as the financial audit, which is technically still in the first part of the report.
Yeah.
Section 4, in terms just below the auditor's responsibility, which is Section 3, Section 4 speaks on the report on other legal and regulatory requirements. Now, 4.1 speaks of unauthorized expenditure, which I cited a little bit earlier, the one of 66.9 million, where they exceeded, with a total amount of 66.9 million. And that this was unauthorized in the State Finance Act. So this ultimately meant that probably they were buying things, or they had to spend money of things, which was not accounted for in the original budgeting.
It's that, and also throw in that they're buying some, they classified something as emergency procurement. That exactly. means they're going to cost more than they would usually cost if it was just under normal procurement.
Yeah. And that was 4.2, that procurement scenario.
Yeah.
Then there was something of direct procurement. Now remember, up until now, we were just predominantly speaking about emergency procurement.
Yeah.
There was also a notion in terms of 4.3 or subsection 4.3 under report on other legal and regulatory requirements. Direct procurement also was a problem. Not a problem, question mark. Let's say question mark area that the Auditor General noticed. They noticed that the Public Procurement Act, which is what you also just spoke about, states a direct procurement method allows a public entity to procure goods or services from a single source without competition. Where only one supplier has exclusive right to manufacture the goods or services, works or services to be procured, and no alternative or no suitable alternative is available. They picked up that despite having a well-documented procurement plan to guide the acquisition of goods and services as part of its planned activities, the audit found that the ministry frequently utilized the direct procurement method for sourcing various goods and services totaling at least 35.6 million Namibian dollars. This practice, this is the Auditor General, suggests a deviation from the Standard Procurement Act. By exclusively using a single supplier through the direct procurement, the ministry may have bypassed competitive bidding, a process essential for promoting transparency and encouraging fairness. It's not our words, dear listeners. We didn't try and re-paraphrase it, reinterpret it for you. It's literally as it comes from the Auditor General. Now, it does not say that fishy things were going on. It just states that probably, you know, something was happening.
Yeah, it's, you know, it can easily be assumed.
Or understood to be looking like a fish. But it's not a fish.
Mm-hmm.
It's walking on
land. And it's not rotten before you go wild.
And it doesn't smell like a fish either.
Mm.
Before you also go there.
Okay, so not only does the report cover a possible contravention of section 33, but also which talks about emergency procurement, but also direct procurement. That's section 36.
Yeah. So we had emergency. We've got direct now.
If you are going to find yourself in public office, fasten your seatbelt because you... look, I'm just reading through these things and I already have a headache.
And this is a very small report, ne? This report is very small, Hamoud. In comparison to the standing committee reports
we've
looked at.
Yeah.
And the standing committee reports were sometimes just 21 pages. This one is 30 or 31. 21 pages and it's just text. There's sometimes not even an extra to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing extra to it. It's just the report as is. What this particular understanding highlights specifically is that it seems like potentially an emergency is created where it's not an emergency, or direct procurement is utilized where it probably was not necessary.
Yeah.
So what does this also sometimes translate to, Hamoud? It translates to a scenario in terms of, was the budgeting too late to start procuring?
Yeah.
Because that's the only plausible. Remember, you and I, we already told ourselves, we can't assume something based upon this report.
Mm-hmm.
Reason being is that this report, the author of the report already says, they won't interpret anything else past what they've observed. They won't make an inference on something that they have not seen, that they have not studied or observed. We also can't do the same, primarily because it's not enclosed in this report as to why the scenario of emergency procuring was being used or why the scenario of direct procurement was used. It just says you're using direct procurement for things that you were not supposed to utilize direct procuring for. You're utilizing emergency procuring for things which don't fall within the criteria of emergency procurement. So technically this speaks of either your financing, your money came too late, or there's someone that really doesn't know how to do logistics and warehouse management.
That's worse, man. Don't assume that.
That's the only assumption I can jump to. There's literally a guy out there
that's
who's working in
a wrong office.
Wrong office, Hamoud. Wrong. Wait.
You're the one that wants to be diplomatic.
Wait. Wrong office, Hamoud. That's being diplomatic. There's someone that was intentionally appointed who doesn't observe stock levels.
Translation, they're terrible at their job.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, that's not diplomatic. You were being diplomatic.
He was in the wrong office.
He was in the wrong office. What? And he's getting paid for that wrong office statement. No.
Now, well, by wrong office, I mean, you know, he should be in an office, just not that one.
Even wrong. Even worse, Hamoud.
Look, fixing cars under the tree is also an office. Maybe that's the... Okay, you know what? That's going a little too far. But look...
I wasn't even that far. You could have said just as well I've said, you know, even cattle. What a cattle herders. That's their office, you know? It's just that the office moves every day with them.
Talk about a mobile office.
It just moves with them every day, you know? So, yeah. So, the downside would have been, obviously, and we also, it doesn't say where.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the most procured thing that you can obviously see and highlight is probably everything to do with the medical outlets.
Yeah.
So, we're talking about medicines. We're talking about other supplies. And we're obviously talking about other particular scenarios. There is, however, another particular interesting thing that popped up. And I'm so scared. And I understand why the new Minister of Health said she wants to see AI.
Ambulances?
Powered ambulances. If you go, helmet is an ugly thing. When I read this sentence, I was like, so these guys can't drive? Why are we fixing so many particular Minister of Health cars? Cause I want to get to that particular sentence. Oh yes. So, this is annexure A on page 10, which speaks about the under expenditure. But it technically takes you to the next one in terms of the miscellaneous boarding, retention and other particular aspects. So that was overestimation. I really want to find that one. And it was such an interesting thing to read that so many cars in the Ministry of Health are damaged, are written off, need constant fixing. And some of it is a scenario of like, do these guys know how to drive that work in the Ministry of Health?
Ouch.
A car is at least supposed to last you the 5-year cycle, you know, the service cycle and all that. The 5-year cycle at least.
Yeah, that's actually true. Considering the car brand that is mostly prepared by our government.
Exactly.
Not on the VVIP level. We know those ones like to go German. Yeah. But, ordinary helmets, they mostly are running around with the Japanese engineering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was such an alarming thing to see, man. Okay.
Okay.
Suddenly I can't find this thing and I literally read it in this particular report, which was very interesting. But yeah, you were still saying, Hamoud?
While you look for it, one thing that I've seen, one conclusion that can easily be drawn from all the reports that we have seen, especially, those ones that talk about or more like hints towards procurement, is that, they seem to be low key pointing at the the procedures have are beginning at this point to work against to work against us. The procedures are good for transparency and obviously so that not all the money and power is in the hands of one or just a few. So you want to have compartmentalized power structure, which I mean that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But at this point, it's beginning to look like we have it compartmentalized. Excellent. When it comes to regulation, more like tracing where the money is going and how it's used. Also, it's a brilliant idea.
Mm.
But procurement-wise, in terms of basically getting things done, we're beginning to see that, when someone tells you that, I couldn't replace the door because, I have to follow the procedure and the procedures are just that many, so that's the reason why I haven't done my job.
Mm.
I'm not going to blame that guy for not following procedure because if he hadn't followed the procedure, would be there asking questions like, why did you do this? And one of the very, common example or more like, nationally at this point, I think it's safe to say a known example of that is what happened at Namco.
Mm.
Yeah. The ACC came out and, the ACC came out and, said to the public, what the former executive director of Namco did was against a board of director or more like the entity's regulation on how it should have been done, but it was not money that was taken for personal gain.
Yeah.
It was money that was taken and actually invested. And if you look at the rationale behind it, because the due date was closing fast. But the board of directors seems to be, seemed at that time to be, been taking forever to basically, approve the payment. But at this point, before you even point all the fingers to the board of directors in Namco over why they were taking forever, one question to ask yourself is it possible there are procedures they were also following? So that's where you see that, okay, are we proceduring ourselves to sluggishness in terms of implementation of a lot of plans that we, you know, and over a lot of things that we want to get done? But from the look of things, and also from the recommendations of Mr. Shobons, Mr. Shobon, we don't have enough policies. Oh, dear.
No, we don't. But, okay. Now, it seems like I...
The few that we have are already beginning to cause sluggishness in terms of implementation. Now, imagine when we have a lot of them. Yeah. Like, you know, at least a half, if, you know, just a fraction, or if not more than a fraction of what we would like to achieve. Yeah, that's why every time I look at these reports, I'm like, you know what? I think I'll give public office a pass. Basically, I think private entities are not different either. It's because it's about, like you just pointed out, there are standards and regulations to be met.
Yeah.
And they must be met. And we saw this.
Yes. I found the section.
Oh, found.
It's on page 17.
Okay. Yeah. Now, just don't lose it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And basically last year was the first time that we saw that, it's also, it's becoming more and more serious in terms that we require not only public entities or public ministries, executive offices and SOEs, but also political parties to adhere to these things.
Yeah.
And the auditing part, now, until you explain it that way, that's when I'm beginning to see that, even those of you that want to become, you know, career politicians, you have to understand, again, there are procedures. Because one thing that we learned last year was that every political party that has a seat in the National Assembly gets gets money from gets money from public coffers. But then it's not just the money that they are giving you and then telling you, you know, just go bananas. But you know, at the end of the day, you also have to compile a financial report. Now, this financial report is based on an internal audit that you have conducted yourself, and then you submit that report to ECN. Now, ECN,
and then you should appoint as a political party, according to that report and I did, they should have a financial advisor that firstly oversees and puts the thing into a nice readable format.
Yeah.
It's not just about you showing up and say, all my invoices and here are all my receipts.
Compile a report. They didn't say give us your receipts. Yeah. They said compile a report.
So you need to appoint a financial officer that then, you know, makes the thing look nice. Puts in a nice readable format, and then you submit that thing to the ECN.
Yeah, they are also allowed. They may bring in their own, you know.
Not every 4 years or 5 years.
No.
Every year. Actually, that means, Helmut, you and I will have to do that exercise again later this year, before the elections obviously pops up.
Okay, you know what? Go with your...
Yeah.
Your point. Yeah.
Yeah. So the point I wanted to make, which was a little bit earlier. So this is under the general information section of the report, which obviously highlights, or it's almost like looking at everything that's there, like stores and depots and internal inspections, all these particular things that speaks to assets and other particular, and even like money on hand and even like stock on hand. For example, the value of certain pharmaceuticals in the medical store. So they get to vehicle section. The vehicle section of this report highlights two components of the section. It's accidents, cost of damages that the ministry suffers, and vehicles that were written off. So under accidents and cost of damages that were observed by the Auditor General, they note that the accounting officer reported 84 vehicle accidents with an estimated repair cost of 3.09 million Namibian dollars for the year under review. That's 2023 to 2024. And that 59 vehicles were repaired during the financial year with a total repair cost of 2.2 million. You spent 5 million, almost 6 million, Helmut, on repairs. On repairs.
Yep.
Oh, sorry. 59 out of the 84 is 2.2 million.
Is this wear and tear or car accidents?
They don't say that. Just says, I'm getting to the vehicles written off discussion. Oh no, that's accident cost of damages. That is accidents.
Accidents, yeah.
So that ultimately implies that we've potentially got Ministry of Health personnel who don't know how to drive. Because knowing how to drive means you are able to read, you know, traffic signs, and you're able to, you're trained in, what do they call that thing? Defensive driving. Now, defensive driving is usually used for these, when you are
VIP protection,
guys, or if you are someone that has a very, you know, prominent job where you have to go out in certain remote areas, which technically also speaks about the kind of guys that we give the car to.
Like, what should they get a defensive driving license for them to drive an ambulance?
Or they should technically be tested in terms of whether or not they can drive the car. It's not an ambulance, it's a car. So this speaks about the overall fleet of the ministry.
Yeah.
The second point on this is now where you can see that there's bleed taking place. Meaning there's money just flowing out because of damage to assets.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to say, Herman?
No, it's
a little bit later. Exactly,
yeah, later.
The vehicles written off segment of this report notes that the accounting officer reported that during the financial year under review, the ministry wrote off 68 vehicles to the value of 900,000 Namibian dollars with the necessary treasury approval. 68 they had to write off. And now, when you write off a car, Hamut, it's either the car is so damaged. My one sibling once bought from a government auction, these car auctions. This was a police auction, Nampol. Do you know what the police mechanics do? They cannibalize cars.
Like taking parts from...
So if you need to fix one car, they will cannibalize parts from one car. That car is already functioning. They're cannibalizing from a functioning car.
Functioning?
To fix a car.
Okay, then where do you get the part that you just removed from a functioning one?
They don't fix it. That's why I told you he bought a car that seemed like it was, and it was cannibalized. Parts were used to fix another car. But this was a functioning car that was cannibalized. To fix another car.
Does that makes it cheaper than procurement than procuring the part, you know, the specific parts?
Technically yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I haven't spoken to people that obviously sell cars to the state and asked them, you know, what does the procurement entail? What does it include? Does it include you also putting forward service parts and parts for repairs to the fleet that is being bought or procured by the government? I haven't asked such a question.
That'd be difficult to do because you'll have to assume which part is going to break in 2 months.
Well, here's the thing, Hamut. That's why you sell one kind of a car, so that you know what parts to position for the need. But the thing is just, the question is always, do the government garage guys, do they buy parts regularly? Or is it every 10 years? Because there's a lot of cars that they've got that are just standing in the lots, the government lots. There's one here close to us, close to GIPF.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's one there. Then they are right next to the, that's not a garage. It's literally just where the cars are standing. You will see them. They're just standing there. And it's right next to where Pupkovic keeps their new cars fleet. The two yards are literally standing right next to each other. Talk about advertising. And then on the other side of the city.
Seriously?
Yeah, I mean, they're literally telling the government guys, look, we're standing here. New buckies. Anyway, and on the other side of town, you've got where the other garage is. And there's also a whole bunch of cars standing there. Yes, I drive past both on most days. So I see these old cars, dear listeners. If you tell me, I see them every day. I see these old cars every day. And these are cars that technically you can see that you should release them. And then you need to buy new.
In terms of auctions or what?
Auctions and stuff like that.
Isn't the late President Hagi's moratorium still in place? When it comes to procuring new cars.
There wasn't an article earlier this year or last year?
Yeah.
Where supposedly that was lifted to buy a new fleet. That's why they bought those Land Cruisers. Those black Land Cruisers.
For the VVIPs.
Yeah. And that was when the moratorium was lifted. Because they realized that the fleets of the government is also getting a little bit aged. You call it aged fleets. They're too old. They're now out of service. And obviously, as you know, how the car manufacturers do a thing, they tell you.
The parts becomes difficult to get, the older the model becomes, yeah.
Not really, Helmut. They just lie to you. They just say, no, that thing is not under guarantee or warranty. They use that lingo.
So you can buy a new one.
Just to tell you, every 5 years, every 6 years, you need to buy a new one. But as we know in Africa, if it's not broken, use it.
Yep.
Yeah. So from that particular scenario, you can obviously see that 900,000 was written off. So that means these are cars that, you know.
Well, like, you know what? We are not even bothering fixing these ones.
We're not even going to try and or service or replace something. We just need to auction them off. That's what the write-off also includes. Yep. And then. In most cases, I say most cases.
Yeah.
That's what the write-off includes. And the other one was spending so much to repair. My issue, this is the critique, is what kind of guys are driving the cars?
Obviously, guys that are driving with health passports. Sorry, guys. Okay,
look, this is not COVID-19. I mean, you can't say I was health
Yeah. But health passport for a driver's license is crazy. I mean, I understand.
No, last year it was an election. And then the police had to come out and say, please don't show us your voter's card.
Yeah, please, we're begging.
That's not your driver's license. Which is like, what kind of a guy is that to have the guts to show a voter's card to a police officer?
I don't know if you saw this video that went viral of this other lady.
They don't even look similar.
No, they don't. Yeah. This other lady, I think, showed her banking card. And the police officer was like, so we are driving with banking cards now. Like, eish.
People just have to be honest. Just make sure you didn't drink. Just be honest. I don't have my license. Yeah, here's a $2,000 ticket.
It's kind of difficult to convince someone who is drunk that they are not drunk. Those are the people that you've been in a debate the whole night. They'll be convincing you they are not drunk, but they are wasted beyond repair.
Yeah.
They are not a car, so it's not beyond repair. So before we continue, let's take a life read.
This is the Velvice University September intake 2025. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA. Certificate in Health Sciences Foundation Level 4. This is a 1-year full-time course available at all campuses. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse, Midwife or Accoucheur Level 6. This is a 2 years full-time course available in Windhoek, Nkurunkuru, Kombat, Walvis Bay, Katimamulilu, and Otapi. Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6. This is a 2 years full-time course available in Windhoek. Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours. This is a 4 years full-time course available in Windhoek, Nkurunkuru, Kombat, Walvis Bay, and Katimamulilu. Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8. This is a 1 year full-time course available in Windhoek. Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8, this is a 1-year full-time course available in Windhoek. The application period is from 1 June to 30 June 2025. For more information, call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever.
So we have 6 minutes before we call it a day. Overall, this report just goes to show that I'm not saying something questionable is going on in this ministry, and they have done several of this report.
Mm.
I'm not saying something questionable is going on in this ministry, at least not according to the, you know, to this report that we have just talked about here. Mm. It just goes to show, goes to show to mostly point out to more like and procedural ways of how a lot of things are done, especially in relations to the Procurement Act of 2015, specifically sections 33 and 36, one about emergency procurement and direct procurement.
Yeah.
To sort of like try to figure out if something illegal is going on, again, you can easily claim that, but then again, you'll have to face another task of making sure that you have proof to back it up, so that you don't have people going wild with theories that is not backed up by any fact. Mm. You know, we don't want to preempt, you know, criminal investigation. That's an Israeli thing. When it's winter, so it's just my throat trying to cope with the environment, but when we look at it, it raises obviously a lot of questions. Is it this unprocedural way of procuring things that is a included or more like that makes more like a significant part of the Auditor General's Auditor General's office report on the Minister of Health?
Yeah.
How can this problem be solved? Like, I think that's where I feel like, having the Auditor General's office and the Ministry of Health sort of like, just have a conversation over how to solve this problem. Is it a procurement sluggish problem, or is it just a mismanagement problem, or is it a Central Procurement Board problem? Or is it the Ministry of Finance in making money, late available problem? And, it can be any of these. Now, which is very interesting to where the problem emanates. Because, mind you, again, just a quick reminder, this is not the money that is stolen. This is the money that is used in procurement, but just, not used procedurally as per the Procurement Act. Which, yeah, leave me out of public office.
Why? Yeah. There are certain things specifically that...
That's a lot of rules to follow. But, yeah, look, I know you need them.
Yeah, it's obviously to try and stop gaps where there were gaps.
Yeah.
But the discussion obviously also points to like the question marks that you and I keep highlighting every time was, we don't know if it was, like you said, or like I also said, the money was made available too late.
Mm-hmm.
So certain things were directly procured or were emergency procured. But then the definition of an emergency procurement is catastrophe, state of war,
none of which was reported.
Yeah.
That financial year.
And this is not COVID, which was in 2020 to 2021. Why is this still persisting? So, which ultimately means that we probably need a better explainer, but then the Auditor General uses an imported system. Remember, Namibia did not create this system. This, what do they call it? The, what's the system's name? I read out the system at the start of the show. The organization that's in charge of the system is INTOSAI. Guess what that, the S stands for?
What is it?
Supreme Institutions of Audit. Oh, so, right. Yeah, it's ISAI. So it's the International Standards of Supreme Audit Institutions. The system that is used, or the organization that dispenses the system that the Auditor General of Office is part of, they subscribe to the system, is INTOSAI, the International Organization of Supreme Audit Institutions.
No, but we're not making this a one-size-fits-all, right? Because we're not doing that with the climate change mitigation strategies and, in line with the 2015 climate accords. We basically allow every country we're doing the same thing with energy transition.
Yeah.
We allow every country to assess its environment and then figure out what's a priority for them. But before that, Let's take a commercial break.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia, on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. It's 2 minutes past the hour of six. If you just tuned in, you have tuned in at the end of Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And we were looking at the audit report, or like a qualified report. This report that went to private school and analyzing the 2023-2024 financial year for the Ministry of Health. And we pointed out a lot of, a few things that the report also, obviously points out. We didn't cook it up.
Mm.
Points out as some of the things that they were not satisfied with on their observation of how the, that ministry actually, did their spending for the 2023-2024 financial year. And, there were a lot of, there were a few parts of the procurement acts that were not adhered to, and that is raising a lot of questions that can easily push one to assume the worst. But then again, we don't want to assume. Believe me, when we know for sure, assuming I do a lot of assuming, but on my morning show we're not gonna do that here. And of course, coming up next is a business and economic segment with David.
But we'll wait for him. Don't worry, dear listeners. Mm-hmm. It's obviously, we still have a few minutes, a few seconds before he...
Yeah, I think that's him on a phone call. Maybe he's having, maybe there's trouble in paradise. Let's give him...
maybe. But yeah.
Yeah, the worst thing she can do is tell you it's over between us when you're about to go on. Hey, man, now I have to act serious.
Or you've got to act unserious. After that, going like, you know what, guys, don't worry. It's just life.
No, I just call Jakes and tell them I had, I have a tummy ache. Please, just get me a playback.
Jake, life gave you lemons.
Yeah.
I tried making the lemonade, but I accidentally bit into it.
Yeah, now I have all this sour, icky face on.
Yeah.
So Transparency, obviously, you know, okay, look, every time I look at this report, whether it's from the Auditor General or the ones coming out of Parliament, one thing that I appreciate is that we are working, you know, we're headed in the right direction when it comes to transparency. Mm. Even though there's, you know, some reports were coming out late, this is one of them, but believe me, compared to the Constitutional and Legal Affairs Committee report, oh, that was a disaster, wrapped in a catastrophe.
Mm.
With a little hint of bed. So, because these are basically guys that were trying to find out what happened to money that they made available in 2015. And trying to find that out, when was that? 2024. Transparency wise, we are working our way towards there. We're not there yet because, well, we need this report, you know, like pronto.
It's obviously a scenario in terms of, you know, we hear the budget this year it was in March,
mm-hmm.
end of March. We hear the budget unveiling at the start of a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we don't get to see, well, not often because, you know, we sit with reports, but people don't get to see how the report technically or how the particular budget or the monies technically get allocated. We will now obviously have super ministries next year, Helmut. Okay. The weird thing is the reports for next year will probably be of 2024, 2025. So it will still speak of the old ministries. But it would be interesting to see what the directorate for the Ministry of Education, that massive ministry, would look like, because you've got innovation in there. I wonder what budget the guys who are in charge of the Directorate of Innovation, what they look like. Because remember, there is no longer a Ministry of Higher Education. That ministry
shoved it in there.
That ministry was absorbed into Ministry of Education. Ministry of Sports and Youth was absorbed into that ministry. So it would be interesting to see what the, you know, the directorates look like, technically. Here we could see with just this report what the directorates look like. You had home, you had HR, you had the medical services or medical storage guys, you had other guys. So it would be interesting.
This is going to obviously call for a lot of contingency planning.
Mm.
Yeah, it's either amendments or contingency planning, obviously. King David is here, so as for me, until tomorrow, same time, same place on Eagle FM.
See you again, dear listeners. Same time, same place tomorrow. Also here on The Home Run. Stay tuned for the rest of your programming in our company.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipuranenge no wapumbwa ever.